Welcome back. We're now on to our very last lecture of the semester. I want to thank you for being such an incredible and very attentive class. I've enjoyed coming to know you in our Zoom calls. You're all terrific students. Very proud of how each and every one of you has managed to make it through these difficult times that we are all experiencing. You've done a terrific job, and it's been my pleasure to be your professor during this period. And I'm, as I said previously, I certainly hope we can take a class together whereby I get to see your smiling face and we get to enjoy each other's company. This last lecture we're going to be in is on checks and fund transfers. It's a certain focus type of negotiable instrument. What are checks? They are the most frequently used type of negotiable instruments. Again, your negotiable instruments include checks. They include promissory notes. They include certificate of deposits, and they include drafts. And again, checks are a form of a draft. And fund transfers, we'll get into that, is where you transfer the money, and that is generally done electronically, but we'll get into that in depth. Last time we talked about the defenses to payment. You have universal defenses and then you have contract defenses. The universal defenses are available against the holders in due course. They are so socially important that the law has said we believe that this will strike down a negotiable instrument and exempt it from payment even with the holder in due course. The standard contract defenses, however, are not sufficient. And that's what we saw in our cases, that they're not sufficient to do that. They are sufficient with an ordinary holder, but not with a holder in due course. Tonight, we're going to get into checks and fund transfers. You're going to hopefully have a whole new appreciation and understanding of those instruments because they're the instruments that we deal with most in everyday life. Some definitions. What is a check? Black's Law Dictionary defines a check to be a draft signed by the maker or drawer, drawn on a bank, payable on demand, and unlimited in its negotiability. The UCC has a little bit more tweaked definition. They say it's a draft payable on demand, drawn on a bank, and then they say it's also a cashier's check or a teller's check. So they throw in that additional check in there. A fund transfer, on the other hand, Black's Law Dictionary defines a fund transfer to be a sum of money or other liquid assets that are transferred from one party to another. Under the Electronic Funds Transfer Act, which is a federal law, which has been enacted, it defines an electronic fund transfer to mean the transfer of funds other than a transfer originated by a check, draft, or similar paper instrument that is initiated through an electronic terminal, a telephone, a computer, or a magnetic tape to authorize a financial institution to debit or credit an account. Now, it's very clear that this definition was written in the late 70s before you had the modern electronic terminals that we have, like automated teller machines. They include things like telephones. Usually that is not how these funds are transferred anymore, or magnetic tape, because you don't use tape anymore. You do use magnetic retrieval systems such as CDs or jump drives or things of that nature. At the end of the day, you can tell that this is an electronic transfer. Let's jump into checks. What's the nature of a check? First and foremost, when you write a check, there's just a presumption, a legal presumption, that there's sufficient funds in the account to cover the check. There's no a presumption of sufficient funds with a non-check draft. So if I give you a draft that's payable by a company, for instance, as opposed to a bank, you don't have that same presumption. Only a bank check has that. What is dishonor? If the draft is dishonored, the drawer is civilly liable. A bounce check is a check which is drawn with the intent to defraud the person to whom it's delivered. That means the drawer is also subject to criminal prosecution. And a bounce check is when you write a check where you know that there's insufficient funds in your account. You're just looking to get the money to basically defraud the person into giving you money. And a bad check is covered under what we call bad check laws, which there are several in New York State, not only covered under the UCC, but also under the general business law, as well as the penal law. It's a crime to pass a bad check. And that requires the foreknowledge that there is insufficient funds. It's not a situation where you miscalculated the amount of money in your checking account, wrote a check, and sadly, it's what we call an overdraft. That's not a bad check. A bad check is a check where you knowingly write it know that the funds aren't there. You don't care. You want to get the money out of the person who you write to it, and you know when they present it that they will not be paid, that it will be dishonored. A check is demand paper. That means when that check is presented, it will be paid. When is it payable? It's a demand draft. Now, there are things called a post-dated check. If you make your check instead of today's date, you make it next week's date. And when that is a post-dated check, and that is when the check shows a date later than the date of execution. Post-dated check means that the check is not payable until the date that is on that check. So it's considered a time draft. That means it will be paid after that period. And if you demand payment before that, it's not obligated by the bank to pay that post-dated check. A check has to be in writing. That's one of the requirements. Now, if you remember, it's one of the requirements of all negotiable instruments. They all have to be in writing, but a check has to be in written form. It also has to be delivered. The delivery of a check is not an assignment of money on deposit, so it does not automatically transfer rights in the depositor of the bank to the holder of the check. It requires the delivery to the bank. There's no duty of the bank to a holder on personal checks, only to the drawer, because they have an obligation to the account holder, not to the person who cashes the check, unless that is the account holder. It only has to the account holder, because that's who's liable, the account holder, to the person who is trying to cash the check. The bank itself is only liable to that account holder. There is a duty of banks on bank checks. So if you get a money order or a cashier's check, remember a cashier's check is a check that is written from that bank. The money order, again, is a check that can be written from that bank or another institution. Substitute check is where the check gets lost and the bank can, under federal law, under Article 4 of the UCC, can basically create a copy of the check and use it as a substitute. Certified checks are a special animal. A certified check is an ordinary check that the bank takes the money out of the account and puts it in a special designated place within the bank's funds to be paid out immediately upon presentment. So when you have a certified check, it's denoted as certified on the face of the check, and the bank, after that notation, has to make payment on that check. Why? Because they've already removed the funds out of the depositor's account who wrote the check and have certified that and put those funds aside. So unlike that ordinary check where they have no obligation to the holder of the check, they do have an obligation to the holder of a check when it is a certified check, because the bank has already taken those funds and they have certified it that they'll pay it on demand. When you request a certification, it can be requested by the holder or it can be requested by the drawer. Now, overwhelmingly, it's requested by the drawer because the holder wants it certified. But the holder can also request the certified check as a holder as well, but they're the ones that have to pay for that. Now, steps to obtain payment. First, you have to present the check. You present the check, and then the party, the bank who's obligated to pay it, has to pay it upon presentment because it's a demand instrument. Again, the bank has no obligation to the holder, only to the drawer. Presentment is a physical delivery of the check. It can be done by instrumentalities, as we said. It can be done by mail. It can be done by the use of electronic banking in certain circumstances, but it's got to be presented to the bank. Time for presentment. The UCC says it must be made within a reasonable time after the drawers and endorsers have signed it. What constitutes a reasonable time is determined by the nature of the instrument, by commercial uses, and the facts of the particular case. Untimely presentment is when it's gone beyond that period. Under UCC, it establishes two presumptions as to reasonable time of checks. If the check is not certified and is both drawn and payable within the United States, it is presumed that 90 days after the date of the check or the date of its issuance, whichever is later, because sometimes the date on the check is before the date of its issuance, whichever is later, that reasonable time to make the presentment, 90 days, okay? With respect to attachment of liability of an endorser is 30 days after the endorsement is presumed a reasonable time. If a check is dated with the time of issue, it is presented immediately for payment. So as long as it's not a post-dated check, it can be paid out immediately. You can have an agreement with the bank under Articles 3 and 4 to honor the instrument beyond such time limit. That's generally worked out with the drawer, that they can say, you know, we can go beyond that 90-day time period if they make that agreement ahead of time. What happens when a check is dishonored? There's insufficient funds, or the bank has a question whether or not that's a valid signature. There's a lot of reasons for that. But if a bank refuses to make the payment because of one of those reasons, the drawer is then subject to the same secondary liability as the drawer in the original draft. So to be able to attach that secondary liability, the holder of the instrument must notify the drawer of the dishonor. And what they say is, okay, you were the one who signed this check. You were the one who made this check. That makes you the drawer. The holder has to notify them of the fact that it's been dishonored. Because then, remember, the holder has no nexus of duty with the bank. The bank doesn't have any duty to the holder. They have it to the drawer. That's why you have to notify, as the holder, the drawer, that the bank who works for them, who maintains their account, hasn't paid the check. So this notice may be oral, it can be written, or it can be electronic, but you have to notify them because that gives them an opportunity to correct it. They can call up the bank and say, hey, listen, pay my check. You're wrong to dishonor. What's the time notice for dishonor? Banks in the chain of collection of the check must give notice of dishonor by midnight of the next banking day. Same rule. Others, including the payee or holder of the check, must give notice within 30 days. Okay. What's an overdraft? An overdraft, unlike a bad check, is when you simply have insufficient funds. You made a mistake in bookkeeping. You thought that a payment went into the account, it didn't, it wasn't credited, or it got somehow reversed. There's not funds on deposit to cover the overdraft. The overdraft generally gets paid by the bank, even if you have insufficient funds, and it's treated as a loan from the bank to the customer. That doesn't mean they have to pay an overdraft. Again, if there's insufficient funds, they can decline payment. But frequently they do, and then charge a fee to the bank customer, the person who made the draft, in return for paying that and giving that loan. The customer-bank relationship is critical to checks. There's privacy laws within that. To give you an example, the USA Patriot Act says that the federal law imposes certain reporting requirements on banks and financial institutions when you have deposits that are large and withdrawals that are large. Matter of fact, if someone remembers back to the time of New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, he was made to resign in disgrace for patronizing prostitutes in very high-end brothels. And the way that he was discovered was because of these banking laws, because he was making withdrawals. He was a very wealthy individual, and he was making withdrawals repeatedly in excess of $10,000 to pay these prostitutes. And those reporting laws saw the light of day, and where the next question that was investigated was, where is he spending all this money? And they found out that he was spending it in illicit activities. Electronic information storage, with the advent of the internet, electronic exchanges of information, it's become much easier for businesses and banks to exchange information about customers. As a result, all these businesses now are very concerned with privacy, and there's been a whole plethora of laws, including the general business law in New York State, to provide expanded privacy with respect to electronic information kept by both businesses and banks and customers. Now, a bank is under a general contractual duty with its customers to pay on demand all checks that are presented and payable from that account. But again, the bank has the duty to that customer, not to the holder. So if they refuse it, the holder's got to notify the drawer, the person who's the customer, to do that. Now, what happens when you have a stale check? That means a check that was written long ago, okay? Again, they don't have a duty to pay that, and a stale check is deemed as a check which was written more than 6 months ago, and a bank is under no obligation to that customer to pay that check if it's written more than 6 months. Remember that it's 90 days for the holder, it's 6 months for the customer. Stopping payment of a check. Sometimes you lose a check, or you have a dispute with the person to whom the check is written. You can call up the bank and or notify the bank in writing, email them, or sometimes you can fill out a form electronically online. My bank allows you to do that, whereby you can stop payment on the check. So you write out a check to someone and they don't fulfill their bargain, they breached their contract with you, or they didn't supply the item they were supposed to supply, or they defrauded you in some way, you can stop payment on it. Similarly, too, if you lose the check, if the person who you sent the check to calls you up and says, I can't find it, can you stop payment on it and write me another one? Those are lost or mislaid checks. And you can stop payment on it. There's generally a fee to do that. As I said, there's a form generally you have to fill out to do the stop payment order. Now, a certified check or a cashier's check, because that money's already been withdrawn from the account, are not subject to the stop payment order. This is only checks which are ordinary checks, okay? What about a wrongful dishonor of a check? If a check is wrongfully dishonored by the bank, and the bank's liability is to the drawer of the check, that doesn't mean that there's no liability of the drawer. The liability of the drawer is to the holder, but the liability to the drawer is the bank. And as we said, the bank has liability to the drawer. The holder has liability, drawer has liability to the holder. What about the bank's duty of care? A bank is required to exercise ordinary care in the handling of checks, and the liability of the bank is determined on the law of duty of care that you have with the branch or separate offices located. Under New York law, we have a whole series of regulations promulgated by the Department of Financial Services and the New York State Banking Law and the New York State Financial Services Law that govern the bank's duties here. What about counterfeit checks and requirement that you have encoding on the checks? All those are covered under bank regulations, and that is in the relationship between the bank customer, who is the maker or drawer of the check, and the bank. And that's their relationship there. With counterfeit checks, I got to make sure that that's not a counterfeit check. The bank can be responsible for cashing a counterfeit check. Now, that's checks. Let's move over to fund transfers. Fund transfers are where you have an electronic means of payment, and that is increasing every day. From the swipe of a card at the grocery store checkout to the retrieval of funds from an ATM, an automated teller machine, electronic fund transfers represent a way of life in our modern society. A combination of state and federal laws protect these electronic fund transfers. First and foremost, you have the Electronic Fund Transfer Act. That's where we started with that definition of what an electronic fund transfer is. As we said, that's a 1978 law passed by Congress. It seeks to protect consumers making electronic transfers of funds. And under the statute, the transfer of funds, other than a transfer of a check, draft, or similar paper instrument, is that which is initiated through an electronic terminal, telephone, computer, or magnetic tape. This transfer authorizes the financial institution to debit or credit an account. When you go to an ATM machine, you can get money out, you can deposit money. This service available by an automated teller machine is a common form of these electronic fund transfers. And they are governed under federal law. They're also governed under state law. And UCC laws provide for regulation of commercial fund transfers. Now, that's not consumer fund transfers. UCC focuses on commercial fund transfers. In our state and in the United States, you have what is called the dual banking system. You have federally regulated banks and you have state chartered banks. And it depends how they're set up, how their laws of incorporation occur. When you are a federally chartered bank, you're regulated by the federal government, and the federal controller of the currency is the entity that sets out regulations on how you do electronic fund transfers consistent with federal law under the Federal Funds Transfer Act and also under the UCC as well. When you have a state chartered bank, the state laws regulate, and the State Department of New York State of Financial Services regulates their activities for a state charter bank. Now, the overwhelming majority of banks, somewhere about 80%, are federally chartered banks. So they're regulated under federal law. State law cannot regulate federally chartered banks. But when you have a state chartered bank, they're regulated under state laws, and the Department of Financial Services regulates them. So when you're looking at these electronic fund transfers, the Electronic Funds Transfer Act regulates all electronic fund transfers, whether it's done by a state chartered bank or a federally chartered bank. But within those gaps, where you have a state chartered bank, the state laws regulate it. Where you have a federally chartered bank, the federal laws regulate it. What are the types of electronic fund transfers? Well, you have an electronic fund transfer, which can be a debit or a credit against your account. Frequently, when you do a loan, you will have a electronic fund transfer taken out every month from your account. It's automatically taken out to pay that loan. And frequently you can get a lower rate on the loan, a lower interest rate, and a better deal on it if you provide for what we call a EFT, electronic funds transfer, to pay that off every month. So you don't have to write that check and send it in to the finance company or the lender who provides that loan. You also have, as we discussed, and the most commonly used electronic fund transfer medium is the automated teller machine, where you go to the bank, you can draw money, you can deposit it, you can check your balance, you can even withdraw off a credit card and make a cash advance off of those automated teller machines. They are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Sometimes they're affiliated with a bank. Sometimes they're independent. But at the end of the day, they are all linked up on networks whereby they can communicate with the bank in question to withdraw the money or advance it based on a credit card or to make a deposit as well. Several banks offer what we call a pay-by-phone system. Frequently, you can pay your utility bill on that, frequently with a credit card, pay some kind of consumer debt on that. We also have something called direct deposit and withdrawal. Direct deposit is usually where people will have their government check or a paycheck deposited into their bank account on a periodic basis automatically. So if you work for a company, they will automatically deposit it by electronic means into your checking account every single pay period. You can also, as we said, elect to have a withdrawal from that bank account, either to pay a loan or some other debt that you have. Internet banking, people more and more are doing that. They can pay their bills by electronic fund transfer. They can manage their checking or savings account, transfer funds between accounts, and those are all done online by internet banking. That's it for our not only commercial paper and negotiated negotiable instruments, but more importantly for the semester. The next time we're going to meet will be just in a few minutes, where we're going to do the case of Sabine v. Payne, which wraps up the value of holders in due course. But if you allow me just 1 second, to once again say thank you to you for being such a wonderful class and for being so attentive and engaged. And I hope that you've enjoyed our semester together. I know I certainly have. I'd love it more if we got to see you in person. But at the end of the day, we thank you so much for being with us and for taking our class. Best of luck, and I wish you wonders for your future. Thanks so much.